Afternoon, you're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, and this is Farrie Bradley with another installation of Six Pillars to Persia. Today I'm joined by visual artist Lily Lajevardi. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Morning. Hi.
I can never tell the difference. How are you doing?
Good. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming. I got you off mic there.
Oh.
Now you're much louder. I was secretly trying to keep you in the background, you see. Okay. So what we were listening to was a kind of filler I made last night just for fun. I think you can't say that about other people's work. You can't say it's a filler.
Right.
But I can say it about my own, so it's fine.
Right.
Actually, talking of work, one of the interesting things you mentioned about your own was that you like to cross the divide between commercial work and art forms. That really pricked my ears up. So maybe we can launch with that.
Right. Well, it's not so much that I like to. I just found myself in that position because the original inspiration for these video pieces that I create with my partner, Kiko Vliegentart, was to create video installation pieces in public spaces, meaning spaces that people pass through, that bring a sense of beauty and peace to people. Usually our videos capture natural settings. They're unmanipulated, they're not stylized or overly edited, and there's a static frame. And so all our pieces are looped, but so the inspiration of our work in that sense was commercial because we envisioned it in these commercial spaces and really just to make people feel good. Maybe that's just my own interpretation that I think it's commercial in that sense. But then as we were filming and the process of making these pieces evolved, looking at them, I think some of them seem to pass that boundary into they become almost a painting. As beautiful as a painting that you would just want to hang in your room. So I think it just happened kind of naturally.
And you met this artist in the Sahara, you say?
Yeah. Kika, I met her. We actually lived a few blocks away from each other in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, but never met each other.
You had to go to the Sahara.
Yeah, we had to meet in the Sahara.
What were you doing? Like wandering over some sand dunes and there was somebody there?
Pretty much. No. Actually, we were part of an organized group. It's a mutual friend of ours, Kati von Kerber, who brought a whole crew, including myself and Kika, out there to film a kind of art film on the dance and music of the Tuaregs. So we went to the festival in the desert near Timbuktu in Mali, and then we went and spent time with different Tuaregs in there, and Kiko was the cinematographer for the film.
Right, and now, with your pieces, you're projecting them in places, hotels,
yeah, we just had a recent exhibit at Sketch, and we've done some corporate pieces. We just finished a piece, which was kind of cool, which is a triptych on three screens that are suspended from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And the theme is City Lights, Hong Kong, New York, and London.
That's kind of departing from your natural
right, so
matter.
Yeah, we also do urban landscapes. We've also actually choreographed some dance pieces too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but I think the one thing that unites them all, or one of the things, is that they're all looped, and this frame is static. the frame of the video. So in a way, we like the idea that there's no narrative in the film, so that you can kind of just engage and be mesmerized by it, but then you can also just pull out and you're not necessarily missing anything. It's just a moment that you can kind of be
entranced by. That's another relaxing element of it.
Exactly, exactly.
The interesting thing is that I suppose all these pieces are shown in extremely kind of noisy atmospheres where people are talking, there's sound cutlery problems,
right,
and so on. So there's a contrast.
Exactly, yeah. The contrast, definitely.
Mm. Well, how would you feel about showing in an art gallery?
Oh, absolutely fine. I mean, there's one piece, well, there's several pieces, but one piece just comes to mind that we've done of these sand dunes and the patterns that the wind makes on the sand, which I think would just be beautiful framed as a painting in a gallery or in someone's house.
There's something very zen about your natural subject matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very focused, very detailed.
Yeah.
One thing.
Exactly.
Focusing on one detail, yeah.
Exactly.
And your dance piece is, well, it's upside down shadow.
Yeah.
Is
it's
that
just,
right?
Yeah, it's just
it
the shadow of two dancers. That one that you're looking at was actually inverted, so it's the kind of negative. But otherwise, it would just be grey on white of the shadow.
And soon you're going to be showing in a women's cinema from Tangiers to Tehran festival.
Yes, yes, very exciting festival that was curated by James Neal and Susie Gillett from the French Institute. And it's bringing together women filmmakers from across the Middle East and North Africa, contemporary and from the past. It'll be feature films, documentary shorts, and there'll be one evening with just video artists at Rich Mix Cultural Foundation, which is on February 29th. Mm. And my video pieces, or some of me and Kika's video pieces, will be in the reception that'll be playing on loop throughout the evening. But
so that's the 22nd of February to 2nd of March.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you want to go, then you should check out TangiersTehranFilm.org. Tangiers Tehran. Very interesting kind of line they're drawing there.
The line?
Between Tangiers and Tehran.
Exactly, yeah. It's true. I mean, actually, I think they did go over that boundary. I think there's one film from Afghanistan.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Right, it's all the same. Desert is desert. How's it been, your relationship with desert? Because all the photos I've ever seen of you have been standing barefoot in some immense, sprawling desert.
Maybe I don't have that many photos of myself, so...
But you do seem to enjoy that kind of
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think that's from your Iranian background?
Well, I don't know. It's a funny question. I haven't actually spent much time in deserts, but that time that I was in Mali for a few weeks, just a couple of years ago, being with the Tuaregs and just their dance and their music really touched me in such a deep place that I felt that maybe the way it resonated within me, and I just the way they dance and the way it came out of me dancing with them and being with them, and that kind of affinity I had with it, I felt was so deep that maybe it was something, I mean, who knows, in my genes or...
Well, would you like to go back to Iran and use Iranian landscapes? The salt deserts, maybe?
I mean, I'd definitely like to go back to Iran since I've never been.
Oh, right. You know, but your boyfriend's from Iran.
And he's never been either.
Oh, right. So it's a generation.
But he speaks Farsi and I don't.
How do your parents feel about you not going back there? Do they ever encourage you or they just think it's not important?
My dad thinks, well, he doesn't want to go back just in principle because of the regime. My mother's been back and would love for me to go. I just have to organize my paperwork.
How do you feel about it? Do you feel it's 100% safe? Have you got some trepidation?
No, I don't have any reservations about going. I think it's just a matter of getting my paperwork. I don't have a problem with wearing the veil. I mean, the government's the government, and hopefully that will evolve the whole situation there. But the people are the people. I'm just look forward to going and meeting the different people there and seeing the landscapes. And I don't think that the situation of the government necessarily... It's a part of it, but it doesn't have to adversely affect my experience of Iran, you know, the other aspects of Iran.
I'm surprised you haven't been because you definitely like to travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you end up in the Italian GQ magazine?
Random story, just a friend who heard about the music consulting that I do. Mm. And thought it was interesting and told a journalist friend of hers who called me up.
There's the word music consulting. Now, let's talk about that. What okay. is music consulting?
Music consulting. Well, for me, in my case, I don't know for everyone, but I spend a lot of time researching different music, And then I create customized playlists for different commercial spaces, so hotels, very high-end restaurants, clubs, hotels, and then also for private clients. Mm-hmm. But I provide a range of music services for people, so I'll organize live musicians for events.
I've heard about your bongos at Annabelle's.
Right.
Sounds good.
Put together all of the musical elements to create an evening.
There's something very theatrical about everything you're doing, actually, because when you think about it, people are listening to a track on a CD, mm-hmm. and then the musicians are playing live. So it's like you've taken a kind of hologram attitude towards art and event.
Right, yeah, I think adding the live element always is very important, key to creating something inspiring. And maybe also that's from our culture too, you know.
So I'm interested to know, because my mind's full of possibilities, how did you get into music consulting? Were you in a venue and you thought, this music's terrible, it doesn't suit the venue, I'm going to make it better?
No, or much less.
Were you meditating and
spontaneous,
someone said,
and glamorous?
I feel music coming from you.
No. Well, I've had a long interest in music. I had a radio show at a university in America for 3 years, so there was always that interest or passion. But my brother was actually consulting in the hospitality industry and working with different people in hotels. Also, he was the one who was working with Annabelle's, and he brought me in since he knew that I loved to work with music so much.
And what kind of consulting was he doing?
He would consult on all different kinds of things, bringing in the right kinds of people, trying to change an environment and make it more warm, more inviting, make it more hip.
Mm.
So he did a lot of different projects.
So he could be called a trend consultant.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's very particular about how.
Oh, okay, we won't say anymore.
Yeah, we won't talk about his branding.
So do you have an ongoing relationship with the places that you set the music libraries up for?
Yeah, definitely. We create usually a basic music library based on what the clientele is. And what the atmosphere of the restaurant is they want to have. You know, if it's an Italian restaurant, maybe they want to have some more Italian music, maybe not at all. So we'll set up, several hours of music, and sometimes we'll separate it like an early evening, you want more mellow music, and then as the night moves on, you want to pick it up a little bit. So sometimes it's organized in that way. And then we'll do updates depending on the client, quarterly or every month, or to refresh it, and then you keep expanding on the library and editing it.
That's a very interesting idea. You know, it's almost like radio that you're setting up for them with no speech.
Right.
But at the same time, it's something they own. They
exactly.
have the rights for.
Right. And it's customized, so we have a dialogue. You usually have a dialogue with your client, too, about what works best for them, what they don't like. And so it becomes very personalized.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's and fun. Do you have a relationship with the MCPRS?
No, well, that's organized by the restaurant.
Okay. Yeah. But do you make some of them aware of it? Because obviously they'll say to you, it's fine for me to play this music, isn't it? And you'll go, actually, it's not. They have to pay rights, don't they?
But that they would be normally, all of these places would be playing music before.
Oh, of course. So, yeah. So you have never approached a place or worked with a place that has said, well, we want to get into music?
No, actually, every place that I've worked with has already had music, but not music they were happy with.
Mm.
Yeah. Another really fantastic thing is that I helped Charlie Gillett out once a week in his studio.
That's how I got to hear about you, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So thank you, Charlie, if you're listening.
What do you do with Charlie?
It's really the most fantastic job ever, because once a week I go to his studio and he receives, you know, I don't know how many, dozens and dozens of CDs every week from all of these artists all around the world. And my job is just to listen to them with him.
Mm.
So it's such a great experience because he has so much knowledge about music, and we kind of have, we do have a lot of similarities in our tastes, so generally we'll enjoy the same things and not others. And just by listening to it, sometimes it leads us to other things, and he's always, if I have a question, keen to pull out an old record from his collection, we'll listen to it together. So it's always a learning process, always about discovering.
So you're sort of weaving in and out of what you're listening to, going on to this, other things it's related to. It's kind of an education for you, yeah?
Absolutely an education. Just listening, I mean, practicing to listen. Because when you're in doing what I'm doing, you're listening with a very specific aim, which is very different than when you're just listening to music for your own pleasure, when you just throw the CD on. And that's another thing that's very interesting, too, to me, is that as music, we listen to music more and more digitally, the whole experience of listening to an album changes, because you just have your playlist, you select all the songs out, but And maybe the creation of albums are changing too. It's that an album maybe is not created to listen to from front to back, or some of them aren't. I lost my train of thought there.
Well, you were talking about the changing experience of listening to music, the fact that you can select.
Exactly.
Yourself,
yeah. So listening to Charlie is nice because it gives me the time, as well as him, to just have that, you know, however many hours we listen, 4 or 5 hours,
wow,
just listening to music.
Yeah.
So that's a great luxury, and it's a great thing. And of course, it keeps me up to date with all of the music that's being released.
That's true. And his world music show, so you won't come away with your ears sort of whistling.
Right. Right.
That's an amazing job. What is that again, music consulting? Or was
that I do with Charlie? Mm-hmm. Oh, I would say more. It's kind of apprenticeship slash,
yeah,
I don't know what. It's a great thing, whatever you call it.
So you're like his sounding board, really?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's just a help to have someone sitting there and putting the music in so that he can concentrate on it. You know, and the presence of someone else makes you maybe more attentive when you're listening, and as you said, a sounding board. We, you know, talk about the pieces we like, why we like them, why we don't.
That's interesting subjects as well, how people are changing the way they listen to music. I mean, one thing I've noticed on the bus,
mm-hmm,
here in London especially,
mm-hmm,
well, I suppose in any city,
mm-hmm,
children, young people are listening to music on their mobile phones, and it's an awful, awful tinny sound.
Mm.
But that's all they know, really. They
right.
don't seem to be disturbed because they can't compare to anything else.
True. Yeah. And for us, I mean, maybe for at least for myself, I didn't really grow up in the era of records, or I did when I was a kid, but not really an adult or an adolescent.
So you were always buying CDs?
Always buying CDs and tapes, but it must have been a similar change, because the quality of a record, the analog sound that you get from it, that warmth, doesn't come off on a CD either.
Mm.
So we seem to be going backwards.
But it's so accessible, isn't it?
It is. And of course, that's why the job I have, it can exist, because it could never really exist if music wasn't digital.
You'd have to leave them a pile of records with
right.
a kind of circle around
right.
track three. And a mechanical selector.
Exactly.
Jukebox, in other
exactly.
words.
Exactly.
So have you never worked with jukeboxes?
No.
Would you like to?
It's an interesting idea.
Yeah. What about Iranian music? Would you ever feature it? No. Charlie must have played some.
He has played some. We talked about it. No, I don't really. I mean, the first person that comes to mind is an artist that I very much admire, Azam Ali from Voss.
Mm.
I think she has one of the most exquisite, pure voices around. So she's someone, but she's done a lot of different work. I'm sure she's inspired by Iranian traditional music and uses elements of it, instruments and things.
So what are your parents listening to then?
My father likes melodic pop music.
Yeah.
And my mother likes Persian music. She's actually been really obsessed by this Iranian singer called Namju.
Yeah.
Have you heard of him?
No.
I don't know much about him, but he's a very interesting character, because from the little that has been translated to me, he's a bit of a revolutionary in what he sings against the government, but he does it in a very poetic way, and he has a real rock and roll sound that's very inspiring, and a very soulful voice that kind of resounds with his own truth, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
Very inspiring. So that's all my mom has been listening to for the past.
She's one of those
about.
People.
Everyone, yeah,
some people they get into an artist and they completely exhaust the collection.
Exactly.
And they've memorized everything and they can mime themselves to every song. Yeah. And then they change to something new.
Exactly. I do that with songs.
Yes.
Since I don't really listen to albums.
That's true. No, yeah. I don't listen to it. I mean, if a whole album's running, it's usually because I'm not listening to it all the time.
Right, exactly.
Mm. So,
actually, there's one artist, another one that comes to mind, who I think actually is one of the very few artists that I've come across who has consistently made very good albums. And I don't think there's one song on one of them that I don't like. And her name is Marta Topferova. She's another artist that I discovered through Charlie. Very
she sounds
interesting
Russian.
Story. Yeah, she's Slavic.
Yeah.
I don't know from where. I think she's from the Czech Republic, but lives in New York and only sings in Spanish.
How bizarre.
And normally you would think that someone who's not singing in their native language, unless it's in a pop kind of way, like a Manu Chao, which you can get away with, doesn't ring as authentic. But she really, really manages to, and the whole album is just so beautiful, so melodious, the instruments that she uses, really beautiful voice. So those are just albums I could just listen to over and over and over again, every song.
Oh, you've got your classics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when you were growing up, didn't your mum have the usual Gougouche and all that in her collection? Weren't you brought up on all that stuff?
No, were you?
No. But that's different because...
Was your mother's Iranian?
Yes.
So?
She was just too busy when we arrived to sort of set herself up with everything that she'd had in Iran.
Uh-huh.
But I know she loves Gougouche.
But you didn't listen to her growing up?
No, it was my auntie more who came over when she was 16 who had a lot of music that I got into. Bibi gol, fadad besham, fibi gol, that kind of stuff. Yeah, kind of poppy. But I got extremely bored with it when I was about 20 because it was always the same, I felt, and only the 60s stuff really stood out for me. But now, interestingly, there's a kind of hybrid music coming out.
Right.
People are into electronica and Iranian
exactly.
music.
Yeah. Actually, just speaking of Iranian music, I am helping organize the music for the... do you know the Iran Heritage Foundation?
I know them.
So for the big Nowruz gala.
Oh,
the
great.
New Year's, yeah. So I've been enlisted to help.
Fantastic.
But trying to...
Nowruz, by the way, is March 21st, Persian New Year, first day of spring, spring equinox. Mm-hmm. A sensible time to have New Year,
absolutely.
Not in the middle of winter.
Absolutely. We all agree. But 700 Iranians in a room, it's, I guess 700 any people in the room, it's hard to please everyone.
Mm.
So it's interesting, their choice for the band is a pop musician called Arash from Sweden. Do you know him?
No, but he's obviously going to do the medley.
The medley?
Yeah, he's going to go through a range of music to please the older ones, the younger ones.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Are you going to spend your Nowruz there?
Yeah. They have to put on some other music and organize some musicians. I'm thinking of having some Persian musicians play with a DJ.
So you won't exactly be DJing?
No. I actually don't like to DJ myself.
Why?
I don't like the pressure of it.
Hmm.
I like to do it beforehand.
So you could say you're an iTunes DJ.
Maybe, I don't know about that.
The tune selector.
I prefer a music consultant. Thank
yeah, that's okay. Yeah, but I know, on the street you'd be called the selector.
The selector, really?
With an A, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's better than iTunes DJ.
Yeah, that's terrible. I just made that up. We use that here at Resonance, actually. We have an iTunes playlist, and that's how everything plays out. Just because it automates itself very well.
Absolutely. It's a great program, I have to say.
It's a bit like spyware, though.
What is spyware?
Well, I mean, it kind of knows so much about your computer. The more you start using it, the more it knows about you.
iTunes?
Yeah. Well, all sort of programs that connect to the internet, especially.
Exactly. That's just having a computer.
So do you work a lot with MP3s, or are you carrying CDs around?
No, I work mostly with MP3s. Well, I don't always compress the file into MP3. I use different file formats.
And how do you carry them around?
I burn it onto a DVD or I upload it into an iPod.
Yes.
Yeah, depending on the sound system that I'm working with.
Is iPod quite an easy thing to connect to PA systems and so on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for any high-end one, most of the time it works.
Have you seen the new Palm Top DJ gadget?
I know.
MP3s with two little turntables.
Right.
You can hold it in your hand and do mixing.
Oh.
They're fading between songs and scratching.
Right.
So you can actually hold the MP3 turntable in your hand.
Right. That's pretty cool.
Do you watch all that kind of stuff? Are you into that?
No, that's why I said I also don't enjoy DJing. That part of it hasn't ever really inspired me, the mixing part and the scratching part.
What about then when you go to the Sahara and all these places? Do you feel that you'd like to record the music that you're listening to?
Actually, absolutely. I think when you go to any place where there's such a rich musical tradition, you inevitably, especially if you're looking for it, but find so many talented musicians that are lost in some corner of some place, and we did form relationships with some people that we tried to, even actually Kati, who made the film Footsteps in Africa, based on our experience there, tried to have one of these artists that we found in the desert there who was so talented, bring him over. And of course it becomes this horrible thing with visas and organizations. So it's, and then it is possible, absolutely. But I think it requires a lot of organization and focus if you're going to go there and then deal with the rights to bring someone's music over. And I think you have to be focused. You can't just kind of go and copy someone's music and then come back and do something with it.
I'd be happy to just go and do field recordings and call them field recordings.
Can you do that? I guess you can.
I don't know. It depends what you do with it, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. If you I think the idea would be to use it in some way so that other people could hear it.
So you're an interesting mix because there's your artistic interest and there's your commercial success.
Right.
And I would have thought as an artist, as someone who's interested in music and all these wonderful locations, you'd be out there with a microphone standing next to Kika, you know?
Right. Well, again, I think it's just a question of focus, what you focus on. And I want to make what I make, I want it to be viable in the world. Not all of it necessarily, but I want it to have a relationship with the world and make my art sustainable. So
now you're calling it art. That's great. We've made progress in half an hour. Because you weren't sure at the beginning if you were going to call it that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's funny. It's like I was saying before, it's just when you call something the art world today, the contemporary art world today has just so many kind of taboos in a way, or just so much criteria, and I don't engage with it really. About when you enter the art world, you really have to go in it with how should I say, you have to project yourself as an artist and go after the career path of an artist, I guess, like with any other career. But I'm just more focused on what I'm doing, I guess.
And what do you make
trying to sell it?
When you go to a gallery or you ever see any film art, what do you think of it?
Well, it's very different to what I do. Yeah. And that's why, again, like my work is kind of somewhere in between a VJ and something that you would see in a gallery. But most video art that I've seen in a gallery has a narrative element to it. A lot of it is supremely unaesthetic. Just completely ugly to look at, you know, no visual beauty. And I don't understand a lot of it. I think the market, of course, is very new for video art as well. So,
okay, well, if people want to see your work, they can go to muzai.com, M-U-Z-A-I.
Yeah, which I have to update, but they can see the...
can see the camels.
They can see a few of our pieces on that. And also at the Women's Cinema from Tangiers to Tehran Festival on the 29th of February.
22nd.
No. Oh, the festival's from the 22nd to March 2nd, but there'll be one evening.
The rest of it's not worth it. Just go on the 29th.
At Rich Mix Cultural Foundation near Old Street. There'll be an evening of video artists, including my own pieces.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for coming, Lily.
Thanks and for having
me. Yeah, I look forward to seeing your work in the art ambience. Maybe, I don't know if I'll ever go to Annabelle's, but I'll see it somewhere. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Okay. And we're going to go out with a track by Abjiz, which is slang for sister in Farsi. And this is their track Democracy, which I think some people had a problem with, so they've made it available for free for people to download. So Abjiz is spelled A-B-J-E-E-Z if you want to get your own copy.
Great.
This is the